And welcome back to the Pet Cash Pod presented by ProFluence Sports. I'm your host, Andrew Pet Cash. As always, we hold amazing conversations with the founders, investors, executives, and athletes transforming the future of sports. You can listen to them all at profluence.com/podcast. We did an awesome one today with the CEO and co-founder of WSC Sports, which is nearly a $1 billion company now out of Israel. Also global, 450 plus sports clients. They raised a $100 million Series D last year. And Daniel Shikman, he came on and gave us the lowdown of how they built the company, how they scaled it, and then also deep insights into where sports is going, some interesting trends on the media side, on the artificial intelligence side. All in all, it was a great conversation. We also go into why Israel is a booming place for not just sports, but also technology. So without further ado, let's dive into this amazing conversation. Daniel, appreciate you hopping on today on this Monday morning, or might be afternoon for you now. Excited to dive into this one. You guys are right at the forefront of a lot of this technology, which I'm interested to get into, especially from the AI front, as you've been doing it for a long time now. But can we start here? We need to go into what WSC is, because we see it in the headlines all the time. And I think everyone's like, oh, it's a super cool company. But no one really knows like what the actual company's doing other than, oh, it's short form content or clips or something like that.
Cool. So first, thanks for having me. It's really fun. And about WSC, so we have an AI-based platform that can automatically and in real time generate short form videos. And the aim is to help sports media right owners such as leagues, broadcasters, or teams to maximize the use of their digital media rights and generate new revenue streams. So basically, we're a B2B company. Our clients are, as I've said, media rights owners, or whether it's leagues, broadcasters, teams. We work with more than 450 clients worldwide, such as the NBA, the NHL, the PGA, ESPN, YouTube TV, Bundesliga, La Liga. So a lot of big names. And what we actually do, the way it works, is that we ingest live sports streams into our platform, the same content that you watch as a fan. And first, the system is analyzing the content and trying to understand everything that happens in each and every second of the competition. So we identify every touchdown, every dunk, every goal, every interview, every fan reaction. So we do it using computer vision and using audio analysis and using data analysis. And we not only identify the event itself, we also mark the perfect start and end time, because you don't want to cut the commentator in the middle of the sentence. And we say how interesting or exciting every play is. And so that's on the back end. And then comes the product itself, where basically our clients have access to a user interface where they can set rules and thresholds to what content will be created if something happens and where that content will go to. So an easy example can be in a basketball game, if a player scores more than 40 points, create a highlight of that player in three versions. The first version should be 1 minute long, vertical, will go to the app. The second will be 3 minute long, will go to the website with a sponsor. And the last version will be 6 minute long and will go to YouTube. So it really enables the clients to create relevant content for every use case, every platform, and even every region to really drive higher engagement, higher consumption, and generate new revenue opportunities across all of their digital touch points with fans.
Now, are you just in sports, or have you ventured outside at all? Are there any other applications beyond just the athletic
company
scope?
Is really focused at sports at the moment. We feel that sports has the biggest opportunity. When you look at the media space, sports rights are the most expensive rights that are paid out there, and we see there's a lot of interest around that, and the landscape is changing. And for us also, we're sports fans, so it's easiest and most fun to work in what you like, and we think the potential is huge and a lot of things that are happening. So at the moment, the company is very focused on sports. And that's one of our advantages, that other companies have very broad AI platforms that can do a lot of things, while we trained our systems to understand sports in the best possible way. And that enables us to really excel in that field.
Yeah. And how has this idea evolved over time? Because I'm sure the product today is, I don't want to say much different, but I'm sure it's much more evolved than it was before. Where did this initial concept come from? We're like, hey, this, we need to build this.
So history lesson. So we're four friends. We're really good friends for the last, we're old now, so it's almost 24 years. We met during the university, where we all studied electrical engineering. Then we went to the army to serve as engineers, and actually started WSC as a hobby. We built like at nights from every day from like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. And we created a video scouting software. So WSC stands for World Scouting Center. And the aim was to help basketball teams to analyze strengths and weaknesses in themselves, in their opponents. And we did it for fun because we wanted to do stuff in sports. We wanted to meet coaches and just try new things. So we did sell the software to many teams across Europe. But then we finished our army service and we needed to decide what we want to do when we grow up. Should we go up and work as engineers, you know, in places like Cisco and Intel and back then, and these kind of companies, or we want to go and really continue and work together and take it seriously with full time. And we understood when we analyzed the scouting world that it's not really scalable and it has a cap on it. So we started educating ourselves about the sports ecosystem, about the economy. And we met a lot of different entities within the sports world to really try to learn where we think we should focus on. We decided to focus on digital media because we saw it's growing. We decided to focus on short form content because we saw it's growing. We're talking like 2012, 2013. And this is how they decided this should be the path we're going to take. And obviously the product has evolved over the years, but the theory and the theme around it is pretty much where we thought it should be, that short form is going to grow, digital is going to grow. That's how people consume content. So here we are about 11 years later and still trying to learn.
That's awesome.
Trying to learn every year new things and have fun.
I love that. Now, how has your friendship evolved? Has it stayed intact? I'm sure there's been some feuds over time, but a lot of people always talk about, you know, don't go into friends with business or go into friends with business. How has that looked for your group?
Yeah, we know that's the, you know, the general thing that people say, but for us, it worked the other way around. And it's funny because we're four friends that are really different. Like if you put all of us in the same room, you wouldn't have an idea how we're friends, like really different personalities. But it's working really well for us because everyone is taking care of different side of the business. I don't think we've had one feud throughout the years. We're really, really good friends, trying to have no ego. The company should work. And over the years, you know, after like 3-4 years, the company is also not about the founders anymore. There's like management. There are a lot of employees, a lot of people. So it's a team effort, you know. So it's the founders is a nice story for the start of it. But ever since, it's just everyone trying to make the company successful. So.
Yeah, and you mentioned the growing of it. Now it's, and this may have changed, but just looking off your LinkedIn, 450 plus clients, 450 plus employees. It's worldwide. I'm not sure if you guys got separated from Israel. I know you have a New York office. I don't know if any of your co-founders had to go across the pond, but you know, what has been some of the learnings or even challenges as you've scaled this beyond just you four into a really, you know, global company with a lot of stakeholders across the board, which I view as, you know, not just investors, but also employees and clients.
Yeah. So these numbers are still, every time I think about them, it's like unbelievable to think we managed to grow up to that scale and we still have plans to continue and do so. And it's also really amazing just to think about every year how complicated it is to actually scale every aspect of the business. It's very different to make sure that we continue and grow, and we need to build many processes all the time. How you build the sales organization in the right way, the R&D in the right way, how you become an international company, and just mention it. So we started being in Israel, but now you have a New York office, but we have employees in London and Tokyo and Thailand and Japan and Australia. So how you become an international, and how you even make decisions at a certain size, you start looking at things less from an opportunistic lens and more strategic lens, because you want things that move the needle. And as you're big, you need things that are actually with a higher reward. And it usually means things that are more complex. So it's another growth avenue we had to take with ourselves. And I think the biggest challenge is at the end of the day is how to grow and keep really good culture and really good team atmosphere, and keep that, having this startup mentality where everybody feels that he or she are important and not just like a small piece in a big machine. Because when we look at it throughout our journey, that's the most important aspect. If you have an amazing team, and we've been running together for years, we still have employees that are with us since 2016. So everything is much easier to tackle all these challenges and all these new things because we know each other and we keep growing. So one of the things that we work really hard on is to make sure that people are happy and challenged and stay with us for the long run, and they're growing, and then everything becomes much easier as a group.
Yeah, and how have you seen the transition just from, I know you mentioned at the beginning or a little bit before, you know, as you're building this, you're going from 9 p.m. at night to 2 a.m. and you're coding and figuring this all out to now, I'm sure it's much different. You know, how have you managed that transition, not your group of co-founders, but also like yourself, of going from, okay, now I'm really building the product and I'm working in it, to now you're really, I'm assuming, working more on it and managing those people that are working the engineering jobs now.
So there are a lot of things that are going on in the company. And I think that's the power of having a big team and a talented team that you can, as a company, you're not only focusing on one aspect, you can focus on a lot of aspects, and you're not always involved, even though some of the people might tell you I'm very specifically micro management and on top of things. But I think that's the power of having a really strong team that you can really empower and let them just have an idea, investigate it, talk to the market, and just go pitch it to you. You'll tell them at most time, okay, guys, if you're so sure about it, you're probably right, you know, better than me, and just let them run. And then they're coming back to you only if there are issues or bottlenecks or things that they want your input on or budget. But overall, I think that was the main thing, how we can build a team that can really scale, have really strong management team all across the board, really strong culture of being open and candid with ourselves, because we try a lot of things and not everything works. And it's okay. That's part of the journey. You try things. It's okay to fail fast. It's okay to throw it away and to try something new, and no one is saying anything. And I think that's having this transparency and having that kind of culture enables us to grow, enables each and every one of us to grow as managers, and most importantly, at the end of the day, enables the company to grow and scale in a healthy way that it couldn't have done without that.
And we have touched on you're now global, but I was reading, there's a new report that came out, and you talked about where you went to university at Tel Aviv, which is actually a super interesting study, the sixth most funded, if you look at team members of companies in sports and money raised, which always isn't the best indicator, but it's a fairly good indicator of success, right? It's not always the best, but it's the sixth most come out of Tel Aviv, like Columbia, Harvard, Penn are above it, a few others. And then also Israel as itself, a smaller country, is the sixth most funded company for sports in the world, wow, behind China, US. Anything to this, you know, what's making Israel such a, we'll call it a powerhouse, especially for its size in the sports technology world?
Yeah, it's a good question. First, in general, Israel is a great place to live in, but also a great place for tech, not just sports. I think we should look from a higher perspective in general. We see it in many fields, cybersecurity and data and IoT when it was cool, and fintech. And then, of course, sports is another vertical. And I assume that one of the most important contributors to this is the army, where a lot of young people go to either technical roles or project management roles, et cetera. And they need to manage and lead a big project at a very young age, you know, projects that at the age of 20 or 24, you never get to lead in other places. And it teaches you a lot professionally on one aspect, but maybe more importantly about yourself, and you gain confidence. And also you take it with you and you start thinking, hey, maybe I can do it after I finish the service here at the army. So I think that's one thing. It really brings the confidence and the ability that you can do it. And also I think that Israel is a place that appreciates entrepreneurship and trying different things. So sports is another aspect of it. And we see the same things happening there. And like you mentioned, we see really good companies coming out of Israel, also in the sports world, and doing amazing things. And for us, we're proud to be part of that ecosystem of being there. While, as you mentioned, we moved a bit from being just Israeli to being global, being international. So it's another mindset, but we always remember where we started.
Yeah, and do you collaborate at all? I know companies like Minutely, Minute Media, Pixelot, you know, some other ones in sports. Is there any sort of collaboration factor too within it? Or it's just sort of the factors you laid out of coming from the military and these tech hubs and community?
I think the ecosystem itself in Israel and the startup scene in general, sports as well, is very collaborative. We talk regularly with the founders of other companies, both within sports and out of sports. And you mentioned some of them, whether it's the Pixelot, whether the video sites, when we were much younger as a company. So we consulted with like older companies like LiveView or Replay Technologies, and they helped us out. So, and we try to help now the younger companies. So it's really collaborative. And at the end of the day, everyone wants their company to be successful. It's not competing with others. So we want to help each other. It helps the ecosystem, and you know, the tide raises all boats. So we want to make sure that the sports ecosystem grows as a whole. And if we can help others and they can help us, that's the best way to go.
Yeah. And what's next sort of, I know you said you've been at this, what, 11 years now, but, and you said we're still just getting going. We got all these other initiatives. You know, where do you see taking this company next, maybe from a product standpoint, from a global standpoint, from beyond sports, you know, what's on the horizon for WSC?
So I think there are many things that are happening within the sports ecosystem that are very interesting, and especially in the media space, and as a company that wants to lead that space, it's really important that we'll be leading. So there are a few trends that we're seeing. One of them is the change in how fans consume sports and how they move away from linear TV and watching full games to watching short-form content on several platforms. So besides the fact that you need to create the content for every platform, obviously this is something that we've been doing for years, that change of habits are really affecting the sports media industry and the economy. And you see that all the traditional TV broadcasters, together with the cable and satellite company, are really struggling to justify the fact that sports leagues want to charge more and more and more for media rights. So we see that as a result, a lot of them are now trying to go direct to consumer and to find new ways to get to the fans. But they find out that it's not that easy to go and do that because you need a different mindset, a mindset of, let's call it, an internet company. You need to collect data on the fans and you need to find how to monetize fans in various ways. So subscription is not enough anymore. So you need to start collecting data and creating a personalized experience and maybe start to, while they're watching the game, make them buy merchandise, make them buy a ticket, place a bet, download an app. So it's really a different mindset. And I think the industry is in a very interesting point at the moment. After a few decades that the business model and the economic model of media and sports was pretty much stagnant and the same thing. And, you know, a league sold it to a broadcaster that got money from a cable operator and that's it. So things are really changing and it's really interesting to be in that intersection and trying to lead the change and help the ecosystem. So this is something we're very focused on and working with a lot of our partners to see how we take it to the next level.
Yeah, and how do you see that playing out? I know there's discussion around this next NBA deal. Is it $70 billion? Is it going to be lower than they think, higher? Is there cap to these media rights? Or with Kate, you know, where do you sort of see it going or do you envision it going? Because even, I mean, we saw what the NFL did with Peacock, which everyone talked a lot of crap on. But from a business model perspective, it worked out really well. It was a very highly viewed game. Drove a ton of subscriptions and free trials. So where are you sort of anticipating? Because I'm sure you're trying to be a few steps ahead so you can make sure you guys are well positioned as well.
So I think the T1 properties, and like you mentioned, you said the NFL and now the NBA is negotiating and we'll see if it's $50 billion, $70 billion. But these are the numbers. So I think they are, as of now, they might be still getting the money they're looking for, even from traditional players, even though for the NBA, we're still seeing other players like the YouTube TVs and the Amazons of the world are in discussion for the rights. But if you're looking overseas, you're seeing the Premier League, for example, obviously probably the second biggest league in the world in terms of media rights. And they uptick the price a bit, but they have to give more games in terms of the package. So if you price it per game, they got lower. If you see other places in the world, they try to sell the rights for more and they didn't manage to do it. So I think the industry is starting to feel it. And maybe the tier ones, like I mentioned earlier, can still get the price they're looking for. But if you're looking at the broader picture, you see that it's starting to be harder and harder. And as time evolves, I think it's going to continue to be harder and new business models will have to be implemented. And again, whether it's direct from fan, whether it's microtransaction. So instead of paying $100 here, you'll pay $3 per game. Maybe it's, so there'll need to be different business models. And again, it's just to be aligned with what's happening in the rest of the internet. So I think that's going to come to the sports world. I think there are a lot of opportunities when that's going to happen and that's going to evolve into that. So it's going to be really interesting on that aspect.
Yeah, we've talked more about the traditional leagues, but from a emerging league standpoint or these alternative leagues, and I'm sure you work with some of them, any learnings or things you've seen that some of them do pretty well to stand out and have a chance to go up against some of these major players that sort of, not really even sort of, they have a monopoly over the space in many ways?
I think one of the things that younger leagues started to do, and you know, we can maybe a younger league that grew enough that we can look at retrospectively is like, for example, the UFC. And as they started, they pushed a lot of content to social media, and not just the fights themselves, the interviews, the feuds, everything around it. Like, they managed to get a lot of viewership and a lot of fans. And even myself, I wasn't a UFC fan, but then I saw Conor McGregor back then and then started to get interest. And now I'm following the UFC. So I think that flow, when the more traditional leagues were more hesitant about like pushing content to different outlets and were very protective, I think the younger leagues are, when they're starting to get that reach, starting to get that viewership. And their mindset from the get-go is, okay, how we have this funnel of a lot of eyeballs and how we convert them into money. And obviously the market needs to go and evolve in parallel to that and how you monetize from digital assets. But I think that's, they're starting from a good starting point in terms of mindset, but obviously they need to fight for the same attention span of the fans that are still watching NBA, NFL, etc.
I think Conor McGregor drew a lot of us in. That was he was one of the best things that ever happened for that sport. It's all that we talk about. It's all about characters. I think sports are driven by, you need these huge personalities, and Dana White did a good job leaning into that. Curious, and I know you're a big sports fan, but do you think to build a company in sports, do you think you have to love sports itself, or do you have any thoughts around that?
I find it hard to work in an industry that you don't really love. Like, you know, you're going to events, you're talking to people, you're looking at the product and what the product does, and it makes you really proud. So it's really fun to do it. I assume you can build a company in every space without being an expert, because at the end of the day, if you look at it, and it's fun to see the dunks and the goals and the events, but when you strip it, you look at it, it's a business, and you look at it from that perspective. So of course you can do it and succeed even without loving the topic itself. But when it comes to sports, I think, and I haven't done the research, but I'm pretty sure that every founder that works in sports started because one of the things is say, hey, I love sports, so let's try. So that's my guess, but yeah. I'll be happy to hear.
I heard one person that said they don't like sports, and it shocked me because everyone else always does. So I was like, sort of, it was fresh top of mind. I was like, because they built a pretty good product, big business, you know, over 10 million in revenue. And I was like, wow, you don't like sports either? Like, how are you still doing this? But anyway, I think the last thing to touch on that's important, because it's a hot topic in the space, and you guys have been doing it for a little bit, but is artificial intelligence and how you've seen it develop. And we can bucket machine learning and anything else into that as well. And then obviously where it's headed, because that's not just a sports question now. That's a pretty macro across the entire space. Everyone has at least in their peripheral paying attention to it.
Yeah, I agree. It's in every aspect of life. We see that AI or machine learning has been very important in the last few years and have entered many aspects of sports. We saw, you know, there's the venue experience with dynamic pricing. You see performance or health with injury prevention. You see scouting when you want to get insights on players or team. And obviously in our space, media, you can either automatically film a game with autonomous camera, or you can create automated content like we do. So this is not new. Obviously, the AI or machine learning solutions and how it evolves. And of course, now in the last year or so, we're seeing another aspect of AI, which is the generative AI space, that leads to even more opportunities in how to leverage AI and how to create new experiences for fans, whether it's on the textual level, audio level, and I assume that not too long from now, we'll also see the video level as well. And there are a lot of opportunities, and obviously for us specifically as a company, it's a very interesting space. We are as a company, we're at the intersection of content creation and AI, and along with the fact that we're at the end of the day, we're geeks, so it's natural evolution for us to investigate that space and push the boundaries of what can be done. So we have a lot of things that we're doing in that space, specifically in the generative AI, a lot of things that one solution that is already out there with one of our clients, and a lot of things that we're still working on because we think there are really a lot of opportunities in that space as well, because our aim is to create content for every fan and help our clients to do that. And that's another solution, another way to go and do that.
And do you use it internally at all? Take the product outside of it? Have you used any solutions to I guess, increase efficiency or productivity or however you want to label that up?
Yeah, so for the R&D team, we already incorporated some of the AI tools to help them write the code, test the code, write tests, code review, etc. The marketing team obviously uses it for to create their narratives and all the things that they need in terms of textual outputs. So these are the things we're trying to do in terms of efficiency and being a companion to what you're doing. So it's about replacing them, but really helping them. And then also in the product itself, a lot of cool use cases we're adding in there. Again, it's another tool in a big toolbox that I think is out there. Right now, it's very hyped, and everything that is going on, people say, hey, generative AI. They keep forgetting that it's another sort of an AI platform and neural networks that you need to train and work on. But I think it's going to evolve because it's hyped, there are a lot of people that are now working on it. And a lot of the human intelligence is now focused on that aspect. And that's why we see such a rapid evolvement in that space so fast. And then it keeps the inertia of people coming in and more and doing things, which really fascinating. And a lot of opportunities will come out of it.
Yeah, definitely a lot of opportunities. But like I said, keep these around 25, 30 minutes right in between that mark. So Daniel, first off, appreciate you coming on as we close out here. You know, where can people learn more from a website perspective, socials, where's more information on WSC so people can take a look?
WSCsports.com. You can email me directly at daniel@wscsports.com and LinkedIn. So wherever I'm quite accessible. So feel free to reach out.
Love it. And we talked about before keeping it somewhat mysterious, but you will be one of the first guests on the next series that we're launching. We'll just realistically say 2025. But anyway, thanks again for coming on and look forward to following the rest of the journey.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.